that could like potentially save a life. And we're really lucky because Normie is not like a group of DJs. Like I mentioned, we were founded by a barista, a nurse, someone who was an admin, and someone who was in fashion retail. And also we have friends that are lawyers, we have friends that are scientists, and people who are really good at writing. So sorry, this is like on a tangent, but it's just like we can all come together and make something cool happen. And in this case where there was these workshops for harm reduction, we had people that worked with drug users and worked in the downtown east side who were willing to share their experience and their knowledge with people in our community.
So you have your four-day Pride Festival. Normie Pride Fest is starting on the 1st of August. Can you tell our listeners more about it? Is there anything you're really looking forward to?
Yes, absolutely. Normie Pride is going to be from August 1 to 4th. The programming is really diverse. It's a nightclub, and it's one of my favorite nights. The music's really hot and horny, and everyone's, like, shaking ass. Like, and I'm just super excited for that. And then on Friday, we have a K-pop night at Brella downtown, which is, like, 2 minutes away from Waterfront Station. I walk. On Saturday, we have Really Gay at Enzo. This is our flagship event. We're going to be working with Fake and Gay. We're going to have trans icon Candace Kane, who is the first trans woman to be on TV. She's also Miss Continental and has a lot of other credits under her belt that I can't recall right now. But yeah, that'll be Fake and Gay at Enzo. And then we also, closing off our celebration, is Hard Candy, which is kind of the most quintessentially normie rave that is on the programming. It's gonna be Haina from China headlining with T-Koi and Ags DJing at The Bunker, which is a new warehouse menu in East Van. And yeah, for the people listening, I would like to offer this code. It is CJSF promo in all caps. That's CJSF promo in all caps, and that is 20% off of your order.
Thank you so much for coming. Is there anything you want to add, talk about how to find Normie Corp on social media or how to buy tickets to Pride Fest?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. So if you want to find us on social media, we are at Normie Corp, like NORMIECORP. And yeah, wherever you end up this Pride, we hope you have a safe and fun one. Please be nice to each other.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM SFU Burnaby.
Thank you. Good morning. It's Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby. We just danced our way awake with Soul Makassa.
Yeah, I'm a young black man who uses art to champion and celebrate blackness, as well as creating art that showcases black men as comprehensive, emotionally intelligent human beings.
Right now, we are going to hear a spoken word rap piece by Slam Poetry winner JB, the First Lady. That is Lady Johnny Proby singing Don't Quit, and here at Speak Up, we do not quit. Love, laughter, argument, and encouragement. The words are too few for the essence of you. And it shows just one of the ways that you can take feelings of pain and transform them to love and recognition. Today, we're exploring senior issues through digital media and the creative arts. My guests are Leslie Riemann, the director of the 411 Center, and Joel Flynn from PodStream. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, welcoming you to the Friday Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon What You've Heard show. We have conversations about social issues, culture, and creative arts events, potent samplings about special months like Health Month, Black History Month, Women's Month, Nutrition Month, and more. See you Friday at 10 a.m.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
Hello, I'm Madeline Taylor. You're listening to a documentary produced for CJSF 90.1 FM's Making Time for Radio project. This is I Am a Fruit Tree.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me.
Simon Fraser University has a bit of a reputation. It's known to be dark, the architecture is often compared to a prison, and everyone complains about the commute. Because we all commute, it's hard to make friends on the mountain. As a student, it's easy to let this stereotype dictate your experience. We fall into the tyranny of the urgent. It's tempting to plug in, power through, and ignore the world around you. Thankfully, there are characters at SFU who break this mold every day.
I'm Shiraz Ramji. I was born in Tanzania, East Africa, on 10th December 1948. At present, I'm 66 years old. That is about 24,000 days, because I love to count my age in days, and I can celebrate my birthday every day. I'm an educator. I'm trained as a teacher and also as a gerontologist, and I call myself a justice-friendly pacifist.
Shiraz is very well known at SFU for a few different reasons. He has lectured, worked, and studied all over campus since 1994. I first met Shiraz when I was a student. He was standing in a main concourse with a smile, giving out copies of his poetry. He wears sports clothes emblazoned with SFU logos and walks like he's late for something. What is striking about him is his lack of pretense. He doesn't expect anything from you when he offers his poetry. It's simply an open invitation to engage. I found this so unusual and couldn't quite figure out what his motivation was. As it turns out, Shiraz is a peace activist. He told me he's been writing poetry since he was a young boy. He calls it part of his activism and uses poetry to start conversations and spread his message of justice-friendly peace.
It was mostly grade 5 or 6 somewhere where the teacher said, "You speak like a poet." I didn't know what he meant, but he says, "Write whatever you are speaking." And he would read it and he said, "This is poetry and you should write it all the time." One day I realized the price of photocopier at my student union was 4 cents. So I said, "Oh, I can afford that." So I said, okay, I'll spend $2 every day for my poetry. So I started printing them. And then I started sharing them. That was about 12 years ago.
Shiraz doesn't only do this at SFU. He approaches people in every part of his daily life.
That's always a challenge whom I should ask. But sometimes it can be like this morning, there was a woman on the SkyTrain, she was reading about elementary educators. So I said, oh, I'm an educator. So I asked her, do you read poetry and where do you study? And I said, I write poetry. So I gave her one. So it depends. If I know, like SFU students, is very easy. So I just tell them, I write poetry. Do you read poetry? And then they say yes. So I said, take one. And if they don't want it, then I say, thank you. Okay, next. But even if I didn't have poetry, I would just talk to people. So that has always been my lifestyle.
Back at SFU, Shiraz took me around to some of his favorite parts of campus. On this little walking tour, I discovered that homemade hummus is another tool he uses to connect.
Hi. Hi, here she is. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hello, Shiraz.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Yeah.
Oh, so nice to see you.
Nice. I'm thinking of your ice cream all the time.
I love it.
So my name is Sarah Manassian, and I'm the fitness programmer at SFU Recreation. When I think of Shiraz, I just think of this warm, smiling guy. He would come into the fitness center, and he'd always bring us pita and homemade hummus. And it was staffs, like, would get excited about, like, oh, it's Sunday, Shiraz is coming in, he's going to bring his, like, pita and homemade hummus, and we just loved that. That's probably one of my fondest memories, because it would happen every weekend, like, without stop. And I think that kind of made our fitness center more of a community, too, because people would actually come in on the weekends to, because they knew Shiraz was going to come to bring pita and hummus, and they come in on the weekends, so we'd all sit around and eat the hummus that Shiraz would bring.
He got this reaction constantly. What I wanted to know was what in his life led Shiraz to be so open with his community. After getting to know him better, I started to understand the root of his activism.
Well, you see, when I grew up in Tanzania, I was born in 1948, so I started schooling in 1954. And so it was still part of British colony, and so you see all the racism and segregation of all the different racial groups and so on. So you knew what was colonialism, what is dictatorship, and you hear about all the wars and stuff like that. There were schools which were for European settlers, and then there were Asian schools, and there were African schools. Yeah, like even the buses, that segregated place. You had to, like, you got the movies, you had to stand up because you had to sing the God Save the King and stuff like that. So we all knew that, and the whole glorification of Britain, how good it is. And it was legally that way, but it, so some people assimilated with the whole thing and accepted their second-class status. I wasn't very keen on that, so it was there all the time.
Tanzania achieved independence from British colonial rule in 1961. To the south, Mozambique was under Portuguese colonial rule. They endured a decade of anti-colonial struggle, followed by a civil war through the 1970s and 80s. In the 1970s, Shiraz taught in Tanzania. There, he supported the African Liberation Movement and its activists.
It was part of the anti-colonial struggle in Tanzania itself. We were quite influenced by Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Angela Davis. So it was at the global level as well as local level, there was the whole issue of anti-apartheid.
These experiences of colonial violence, segregation, and oppression have made Shiraz very aware of the dangers of focusing on difference.
I mean, I met a lot of the present and the past leaders of South Africa or Mozambique and so on. So they would come to a school and give a talk. So it has been very much part of my struggle, yeah.
By the early 1990s, after decades of working in education, in medical research, in public health, and in refugee advocacy in East Africa, Shiraz was looking for a change. Both of his parents had passed away, and his partner was killed in a bicycle accident while studying in London.
Well, I was in Africa at that time, and she was finishing her master's in nutrition. And that's when it happened. So we were studying together at London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. So I got the news from family and so on of that happened, because she was going to join me. So that was quite tragic. But then I didn't know what to tell people, because I'd moved from Tanzania to Zimbabwe. So they didn't know her, right? So it was very hard to tell people. So that was on time when I was on my own. At that level, I'm more of a private person. Like, I wouldn't talk much with about these things, generally, unless people ask me. So when it came to 94, my mission was at least to be involved with anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa, and then independence came in April 94. Mother had passed, my father had also passed in Africa. After the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa was become more independent struggles, right, I wanted a break. And my sister was very ill, so I came to Canada.
Shiraz's transition to Canada was eased by his entry into community life at SFU. A student and an educator for his whole life, he was comfortable at school.
So here is our library. So this is what I call the holy place, the holy land, SFU holy land. It's for everybody.
Shiraz talks a lot about globalizing friendship and how this can be done through sharing food with your community. Food was a central theme in all of the conversations I had with Shiraz. This is Celeste. She taught Shiraz when he took a movement class at SFU.
There is an unforgettable story. Every student in the class is required to teach the rest of the class a dance. It could be a circle dance, a folk dance, but they have to make it up from scratch. Shiraz taught us a dance called the hummus dance. It was like a group dance around food globalization, and we danced the hummus, we made the hummus through dance. The joy that he brought to this piece and the love that he brought to this piece was so truly moving.
Shiraz doesn't believe in the idea of strangers. He thinks it allows for fear and separation.
Because I don't have many family members, so I just interact with people as if they are part of the family. Mm-hmm. So when I'm going in the morning exercise, I'm feeling I'm with the community. And so it's a way to break the barrier of being lonely or isolated.
To be honest, I don't know what the words are for it. I feel a feeling when I think of Shiraz. I think maybe the thing that's different about him is he'll engage anybody and everybody. He's just so welcoming. He's so open. He'll come up, he'll give you a hug, he'll speak smiles. Have you read my poetry lately? Here's what's going on. Do you want some hummus? I'm going to bring you some food. Like, it's every time that you see him.
As I said, I always want to know, first to create that community and make people not be afraid of me or anybody else. But also to hear stories of people in terms of not necessarily private stories, but how do they look at life and how do they respond to people like me. So it gives me a feeling that there are many people who want to create that community, but somebody has to start. Almost every case, I'm the one who starts, and then the ball starts rolling.
I love the sense of his deep curiosity for life. To me, that's what SFU was all about. Now I look around at SFU and I see them all. They look absolutely, everyone looks bored to death. You get Shiraz walking through here. He just has a love of life. And you know, it doesn't even need a cell phone.
So it turns out that Shiraz isn't well known at SFU because of his longevity. It's because he reminds people of what they really want from campus. Community and a sense of belonging.
SFU is a happy place, and it's also a place with some challenges. Happiness in a sense, there's a diversity of people. It can be sadness because the education system, so a lot of education is very Eurocentric. And there are a lot of slogans like critical learning or critical thinking, but essentially it's more conformist education. So it can be challenging for you. I normally consider every person is a fruit tree, so I said just enjoy the fruit.
Why a fruit tree?
Well, I was surrounded. I grew up with so many fruit trees. Papayas grow in 9 months. I used to plant a lot of fruit trees. And I think it's a universal food. There's no recipe for fruit trees. It's just fruit. So I thought as a global citizen, it fits in my narrative.
What does community mean to you?
Community is like what I call the fruit salad, right? where you have a mixture of everybody around. So it's much of a collective experience. I mean, there are a collective experience in SFU, for example. It's a community, right?
His outlook is contagious. But here's the thing. What is a community? A community is a group of people with something in common, but it's often described as a sense. You feel a sense of community. It's not something that geographic locations just have on their own. Shiraz's approach is to make every space into a community.
I believe we all have the capacity to touch into something that is invisible, that is greater than us, on however you articulate it. But it is a love that infuses far beyond the imagination and far beyond our daily living, because our daily living is fraught with so many difficulties. And I think Shiraz has probably had experiences enough to have to empty himself, where he then is tapped into this greater source of love. And I'm not going to articulate certain labels around that, but I believe he embodies love.
I tell people, I believe that I'm not the only Shiraz in the world. There are many people in Shiraz in the world. And, for example, I can relate to you because I see Shiraz in you and you see yourself in me, right? So don't assume you're alone.
His poetry is not only in print, it's the impression he leaves on people. His embodiment of the fruit tree allows him to connect and create openness and curiosity in the people he meets. He makes eye contact, simple conversation, and impacts SFU by building community through the simple act of constant and unapologetic engagement.
That's what I tell people. Take your part. If you need help, come and have a tea with me.
Well, on that note, can you share a poem or two with us?
Yeah, okay, I'll share with you the one, my favorite one, which is my autobiography of as a child. It's called We Are Mother Earth. I'm a fruit tree. I'm a fruitful tree. I'm a banana tree. I grow bananas shaped like human lips to share and tell stories with my global friends. I'm a cherry tree. I grow cherries. Shaped like human eyes.
This documentary was produced with the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I would also like to thank Shiraz Ramji, Celeste Snober, Sarah Manassian, and Victoria Haraway for their voices and stories.
Her shores will always be home to me. Oh, I.
You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.
This is BirdNut. Northern gannets are fish-eating seabirds, and they're incredible hunters. Aerodynamic, wings tucked back behind them, diving headfirst into the ocean at speeds of up to 60 miles an hour, pursuing their prey underwater with powerful strokes of their webbed feet. But sometimes, even northern gannets get a little help. Foraging pods of dolphins regularly herd fish into dense, frantic concentrations near the surface, where the fish are easier to catch. As this happens, gannets begin plunging into the shoals from aloft. The more tightly massed and closer to the surface the fish are, the better the bird's chances of catching some. So the dolphin's tactics are a kind of assist to the gannets. Scientists call this a multi-species feeding association, and it happens a lot. These gatherings may seem like evidence of cooperation between species, but in fact they're more about opportunity. Gannets, at the very least, take advantage of the dolphin's predatory fish-herding strategy to more easily grab a meal. These feeding frenzies may attract a mix of predators. Other seabirds like kittiwakes and gulls, as well as seals and even whales, may join the action. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Support for BirdNote is provided by Mary Piggott from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
Grecian loves to weave leaves. They'd take any kind, but they preferred the new ones, the tender green ones, the ones that had just fallen, the ones that were still pliable and movable and foldable and bendable and easy to stick a needle through. They would take threads the color of the leaves and weave them together. They liked what they could make. They made a skirt once. They made a tablecloth and a chair topper. One summer, when they were extremely bored, out of their mind, in fact, all of their friends were away at summer camp, they were so enamored with weaving leaves, they didn't look up from their work for weeks. And all of a sudden, they realized they had covered the entire family house with one huge woven leaf carpet, or maybe a blanket, or maybe a tent. In any case, it was pretty dark in the house. "Why do you weave leaves?" said their little brother. "It protects us from the calamity that is the world today." "What's a calamity?" "A calamity is when a clam and a baseball mitty get together and decide that they want to become a leatherback tortoise. Then they become a snapping turtle, and then they find themselves in a crowd during a baseball game, and there are too many people, and it's just too dangerous, and they snap. And when they snap, the guy selling the hot dogs from the tray around his neck with a string, who is putting mustard and relish on it for the little girl that was seven people in from row number B, well, the problem is that the mustard went everywhere. That's a calamity." "So you are trying to keep our house from being covered with mustard?" "Ugh. No, I just like to weave leaves. I like to weave leaves because they're beautiful. And now we have a cover for our house, and either that's a good thing or it's a bad thing, but it exists, so now we'll just have to deal with it." Grecian's little brother looked up at the sky, which wasn't there any longer, and said that maybe they could make leaf holes. They could leave holes in the woven leaf carpet, curtain, blanket, very large sail fallen on their house thing that Grecian had woven. They could very gently take the stitches out between several leaves to make holes. But where should they make the holes? They decided that they could line up the holes to every solstice. Layla and Manu to come over to help. They could undo the stitches to open up vistas to the sky to allow light in during the day, and during the solstices, they would see the planets and the moons on the right days in the right places. And they could dance and they could sing and they could dance and they could sing and dance and sing and dance. And they could invite all their friends over to lie on the roof and sing and dance with them and look just the right way to see through the holes in the woven leaves that protected Grecian, their baby brother, and their parents from all calamities.